show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Happy to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We intend to provide you with 2 hours of riveting internet radio. Thank you for being with us today. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. And happy to be here. Happy to talk to all of you around the country, around the world. Indeed, it's an honor to have each and every one of you with us this afternoon. A lot going on. We'll try and cover just about everything that big in the news today. Might not get to everything. There's always so much nowadays. Of course, the big news today... it's about Scooter. Scooter Libby. As you know by now, he was sentenced to 30 months. 30 months of prison time, and we shall see next week. There'll be another hearing next week to find out whether or not there will be a lengthy appeals process that could keep him out of jail until Bush gets out of the presidency, and therefore gain himself a pardon at the end of Bush's term and never have to serve another day in jail. Or he could be sentenced, he could be told next week that he has to report to the iron bars within 45 to 60 days. So it's all up to the judge. We shall see what he has to say. I know many of you keeping close tabs on all of this. $250,000 fine, 400 hours of community service, I believe. He was convicted of... I think it was four counts. I know it was one count of obstruction of justice and a couple of counts of perjury and a count of making false statements. And I see where Junior Bush, through his spokeswoman Perino, says he feels terrible about it, terrible for the Libby family, but he's not going to intervene. Wonder what that means, he's not going to intervene. And I have to tell you, I'm extremely disappointed. Did you see the big list of people that wrote letters? The judge put the letters out in public. People that wrote asking for mercy for Scooter. And he made the letters public. My God, what a list. General Peter Pace, Henry Kissinger, Richard Pearl, Douglas Feith, Donnie Rumsfeld. Conspicuously absent, I must add. There's no Dick in there, no Dick Cheney. One would think, wouldn't one, that close confidant and mentor and boss and all that, the guy that got him in this mess in the first place, Dick Cheney, you would have thought he might have thrown a little... letter in there, hey, help my pal out, but he didn't. And Rumsfeld wrote one that made me want to gag, and I wrote down I wrote down one of the paragraphs in Rumsfeld's lengthy letter to the judge. It says, Scooter is the type person others can hold up to their children and grandchildren as an example of a truly honorable public servant. Rummy, you and I must have different ideas of what an honorable public service is. Of course, I understand that you have the Republican idea of what honor is, and I have the other idea of what honor really is. An example of what a truly honorable public servant is. Would he be standing before the court right now, sentenced as guilty, not accused, but guilty of a crime, of four counts, if he were an honorable public servant? And, of course, many of these letters went on and on and on, saying, well, you know, he's lived an exemplary life up until now, and you must take that into consideration. Please don't send him to jail because he's led a good life. He's done pro bono work for people, and the children love him, and his children love him, and other children love him. I don't know what it meant by that. I forget who put that in their letter. I think it was... Let me give you an example here. An example of how corrupt and incestuous Washington, D.C. has become. I mean, we've talked many times on this program of what a small community Washington actually is. How everybody really knows everybody and covers everybody. And the politics is nothing more than sport. Some places have the NBA, some places have Major League Baseball. And Washington has all that stuff, but the real sport inside the Beltway is politics. And it is a blood sport. Make no bones about that. It is. And they go after each other. But when the sun sets, you see, and they go to the cocktail parties, we're all nicey-nice with one another, right? Listen to this letter, written to the judge. It says, my family is praying the wisdom and mercy you bring to bear in determining Scooter's future will include a consideration of his family, the price they've already paid, and what further justice would be served by additional devastation to them and the many other children, whoever they are, who love Scooter. With respect and gratitude for your service, Mary Matlin and James Carville. James, I think we found out who definitely wears the pants in your family. I don't like to use that term, but James, it's true, isn't it? Mary must run you around with a ring in your nose and tell you what the hell to do. James Carville, would you really sign? Well, would you really? I saw the letter. He signed it. Disgraceful. How could you do that, James Carville? How could you do that? You know, in politics, I believe an eye for an eye. I do. Call me wrong on that. Call me what you wish on that. But I do believe in an eye for an eye in politics. Because if you don't get an eye for an eye, you're going to get kicked. You're going to get shoved down. You're going to get beat on time after time after time. And that's what the Republicans have done to the Democrats. You think back during the Clinton administration and think what all went on during there. During that time, were there any Republicans that came forth and wrote letters on behalf of Bill Clinton? I don't think so. Not that I have ever seen. Not a single one. Not one did I ever see stand up and defend Bill Clinton. But he lied. He lied under oath. Well, so did Scooter Libby. And the letters pour in, and the money pours in. You know, they have us believe, oh, poor Scooter. He has to pay this fine, and some of the letters to the judge pleading for mercy. He said, oh, how's the poor man going to survive? He's losing his law license, and of course he has no way of making a living, and he has to pay these horrendous legal bills. Well, there's been a fund up for how long now to save Scooter, the Scooter Defense Fund. He will not have to pay any legal defense bills, unless his friends are all incredibly cheap and don't put their money where their mouths are. Well, that could be the case, could it not? But I'm sickened by that letter, James Carville. And Mary Matlin, I really am. And, you know, they went into court today wanting probation, hoping for probation. And there's going to be an outcry from the right tonight. You wait. You wait. Oh, Hannity, Hannity's probably on right now. He's probably on there right now saying what an outrage this is. I'll bet Limbaugh probably did for 3 hours. I don't know. They all will. There'll be a chorus tonight. Oh, the outrage, the injustice to poor Scooter. How could the judge do this to poor Scooter? How could they do it? The man's guilty of nothing. There was no crime. Valerie Plame was never undercover. Joe Wilson is a liar. You've heard all the stories. But they went to court today wanting probation and maybe a little community service. I think I'm going to be sick. I thought I was going to be sick when I heard that. You know, commit treason against our nation. Have the unmitigated gall to shamelessly ask for probation and the hell with the notion of leniency because he's a first-time offender. Hey, Duke Cunningham was a first-time offender, wasn't he? Huh? He got something like 8 years. This guy committed treason, and there should be no leniency. And his time, in my opinion, ought to be spent in hard labor. All these people ought to be doing hard labor. He belongs in Leavenworth as much as anybody who's ever been incarcerated there. Hell, in other countries, in Japan, for example, he'd be obliged to kill himself in order to redeem his honor. But we're not talking about a man of honor here. We're talking about a Cheney disciple who would know nothing about honor. Those people, and what I mean those people, I'm talking about the Mary Matlins and the Cheneys and anybody that has anything to do with Dick Cheney's staff, they know nothing about honor. Never did, never will. Scooter essentially kept a federal prosecutor from following a case which led directly to the door of the office of the vice president. He obstructed justice. He outed in a CIA asset, the number one asset we had where nuclear counterproliferation was concerned, because her husband told the truth about some lies that the war criminal in the Oval Office told. Lives that have now displaced as many as 5 million people in a population of, what is it, maybe 23 million in Iraq altogether, and killed upwards of 500,000 human beings. And over 3,500 Americans. The man has the blood of 500,000 people on his hands. And he compromised national security for the most crass, craven, mendacious of reasons. Politics. And he wanted probation. I wouldn't give my own mother probation for this kind of an offense. The poster child for the Republican Party who claims to stand for values and personal responsibility. Come on now. He committed treason, and if there was justice, he'd be hung. Seriously, he far surpassed Benedict Arnold as far as traitors to this nation go. We executed the Rosenbergs for less. Judge Walton should be as offended by this notion as I am. The mere idea that he should have gotten probation was an affront to common decency. They have no shame. They don't know what shame is. They just have no idea what shame is. 30 months for Scooter? Well, it's about all that Fitzgerald could get. Frankly, I didn't expect him to get 30 months. I'm happy he got 30 months. I'm pleased with 30 months. I thought maybe he'd get more like 5 or maybe none at all. He deserves more than 30 months, but it had to be real. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
I read about that judge. Did you?
Yes.
Said that was no excuse, that nobody else that had been convicted, because he said that would cause other people to think that would get them out of trouble.
That's right. That's right. He obstructed. He threw up a obstacle in the way of Prosecutor Fitzgerald. He kept them from getting a conviction on others. There's no question of that.
And another thing is talking about the children loving him. I'm wondering if they're talking about the little girl that he wrote about that they put in the cage with a bear.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Forgot all about that. Yeah, they should have brought that up in some of those letters.
But this judge, you know, he doesn't like it when they try to act like they're okay, you know, and not repentant or anything. So I think that was good that he had a judge that was really fair.
Yeah, the judge judge didn't see seem as of you know the transcripts that I read today. The judge didn't seem to be of a mind to be too conciliatory with him or anything.
No.
He was fairly stern.
Yeah, he had words to say to him.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Juanita.
Bye bye.
866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call, 866-546-5254. I apologize ahead of time. We're not going to have any stories about Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan today. My goodness, I know everybody's so interested in that. Paris Hilton's, what is it, second day in the Slammer? Big news, huh? And Lindsay Lohan. I wasn't aware of who this Lindsay Lohan was until just the other day. And, of course, we have the big story about the guys trying to blow up... the airport in New York City, JFK. I wonder sometimes, and I'd like to ask Keith. I guess everybody goes after the same story and why it happens. But I sometimes wonder if the Keith's people, Oberman's people, aren't reading my mind. Yesterday, I went through and I won't bore you with it today because he beat me to it last evening. But every time I hear these stories coming out where they cry wolf, oh my God! Oh, my God, they're going to blow up New York City. They're going to blow up JFK Airport, the Miami 7, the Fort Dix 6. Oh, my God. Keith had a great piece last night. It went on for about 15 minutes, documenting 11 or 12 times where the Bush administration has used fear of attacks to take... stories derogatory toward the Bush administration off of the headlines, and it's worked almost every time. And when you think of the absurdities of some of them, you know, we first had it reported the other day that they could have caused this massive explosion in New York and killed, you know, everybody at JFK. It was just an outrageous story to start out with. Well, it turned out they were going to try and light a match 40 miles away from the pipeline. You understand that all the fuel isn't kept at JFK. It comes through a pipeline. And they were going to light the pipeline on fire like that would follow the fire would follow all the way to JFK and blow up the whole thing. I think you could ask the average kid in 7th grade science and he'd be able to tell you that wouldn't happen. And then, of course, we had the Fort Dix 6. They were going to dress up in pizza delivery uniforms and charge Fort Dix and kill a bunch of well-armed American soldiers. And don't forget the Miami 7. What is it they were going to do? Are they the ones that were going to blow up the Sears Tower? At least they spoke about it in a bar one night or something. The guys that didn't have enough money to buy shoes. Every time... there's a big story in the paper. We get a heightened security, you know, we get a yellow up to red or whatever, pink, blue, I don't know, turquoise. And it's just a way of manipulating the media and having the media manipulate the public for this administration. And hey, let me give them credit. They've done a damn good job of it. They have. They've done a great job of it. And, of course, we have the story about William Jefferson, Congressman William Jefferson, and you've heard me comment on this program many times that I wish the hell they would have kicked his ass out of Congress as soon as they found the cash in his refrigerator. I will not defend somebody like that. Absolutely will not. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, everybody does it. Maybe they do, but he got caught with 90 grand in cash and what is it, a 16 count indictment? You know, those of you that write me the emails all the time telling me how bad the Democratic leadership is, and I must have 50 of those in the past couple of days. Oh, geez, you guys aren't doing a very good job. I think if you're going to be honest, and if you've listened to this program very often, you've heard me excoriate the leadership of the Democratic Party just as much as I have the people on the Republican side. And there have been many things happen lately that, frankly, have made me want to tear up my card. I will not defend a guy like William Jefferson. He belongs in a cell with Duke Cunningham. A 16-count indictment. You know, we had this big blow-up last year when they raided his office one of the House office buildings, the Rayburn building, I believe it was. And Denny Hastert threw a fit because he didn't think the FBI should be allowed to come in there and raid congressman's office because they thought, well, maybe a president could do that for political purposes and come raid the... You know why Denny Hastert said that. Because there's a hell of a lot of them in those buildings that don't want their offices raided for what they might be found guilty of. Right? Now, that's just conjecture on my part, but let's be reasonable here. We know the stories. We know how much has happened in Washington. We know what happens to the money changing hands. We know about the free trips. We know about all the perks. We know about all the family members working for lobbyists. Now, we know about the money, the wealth that's accumulated in Washington, D.C. We know that. And it's obscene. So, please, people on the right, don't send me any more emails saying, oh, you just never say anything bad about the Democrats. And you just say, no, that's not true. I've called for the resignation of this Jefferson before. He's a pariah. Yes, he's not been, he's not been pronounced guilty of anything yet. He's been not tried by a jury of his peers, but the 16-count indictment against him is, well, it's not defensible if you're going to be a realist, that's for sure. 866-546-5254. Don't forget, we got little Georgie heading over to the G8. He's already over there embarrassing the United States of America, as he always does at meetings like this. We're going to listen to Georgie for a moment, and we'll be right back.
Now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. I am off to what they call the G8 summit this week, where leaders of the leading 6 or 7 countries of the entire world get together with the United States. It's an awkward gathering. Many of the other attendees are foreigners, and although they always seem to enjoy themselves, I often find myself at the parties alone, in a corner with no one to talk to. I had such a bad time at the last G8 summit, I cried all the way home. So this time I decided to make myself more popular. I learned how to say hello in 3 different languages. Hola, Kieo, and Aloha. I also made big announcements just a couple of days before the conference, saying I would allocate funds to find more cures for AIDS. And I would finally address the issue of whether there is a global climate change problem. I strongly believe that this was going to make me the undisputed most statesman-like leader at the event. And it is working. I'm sitting in my hotel room alone right now, but the leaders of France and Germany said they were going to call me any minute to have breakfast. I think the phone might be broken, though. I'll provide a full report of my successfulness in next week's address. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Everything to you. You say you want to start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Maybe I'm grieving, but if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show on this Tuesday afternoon. Just about at the bottom of the hour, 28 minutes after the hour. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. You can join the program by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. That's right. We'd love to hear from you. Oh, my. I've received many emails from folks, after that appropriations bill, and I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit, but... as many of you have, it's the time when they start calling wanting money from us, you know, the candidates and the party and the state party and the national party. I see the Republicans, by the way, laid off all of their phone bank. The RNC did. 69 of them, I heard. Odd. But Democrats shouldn't gloat over that. I've received a couple of calls lately, and I know several of you have too. I've heard from you. Asking for money. Just last week and the previous week before that, we had the state party chairman of the Democratic Party here in Florida come to this area, had a luncheon locally here at noon, and had another one, had a dinner in the evening in Naples. And, of course, they wanted, what was it, 50, 75 bucks a head to go see that. Wanted money for that. I would not support the state chair of the Democratic Party, who's done absolutely nothing, nothing, and I'm talking nothing, for the Democratic Party here in Florida. And had a chance to ask the state party chairman about our esteemed Democratic senator here. Of course, we've got Mel Martinez, our Republican. Sometimes I think I respect him, well, they're about equal. And Bill Nelson, our Democrat, you know, a couple of weeks ago when they had that torture bill come up, and the Senate Intelligence Committee questioned the continuing value of the CIA's secret interrogation program for terrorism, the suspects, and suggesting that international condemnation and the obstacles that it's created to criminal prosecution might outweigh its worth in gathering information. And so the committee talked it over, And they rejected by one vote a Democratic proposal that would essentially have cut money for the program by banning harsh interrogation techniques except in dire emergencies. And that one vote, none other than Florida's Bill Nelson. He's Joe Lieberman with a suntan, as far as I'm concerned. And in a closed session on May the 23rd, two Democrats, Senators Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island and Dianne Feinstein of California, proposed barring spending on interrogation techniques that go beyond the Army Field Manual, which bans physical pressure or pain. And under that proposal, the only exception would have been when the president determined that an individual had information about a specific or an imminent threat. And the amendment failed. When Senator Bill Nelson, Democrat of Florida, joined all the Republicans in voting no. And I, for one, am ashamed of Senator Bill Nelson. And don't give me that crap, oh, you should be happy with your senator that votes with you most of the time. No, I'm not happy with that. Not when he's dead wrong on an issue. Not an issue that there is no gray area. It's right or wrong. There's no discussing this. He provided the deciding vote to prevent the Senate from taking a stand against torture. My senator. Thank you, Senator Nelson. Thank you so much. I'm tired with the yellow-bellied Democrats. I really am. And I know a lot of you feel the same way. I hear it every day. It's hard not to just throw your hands up and walk away about it. And, you know, and I just do not understand why the Democrats won't just nut up and do what they were elected to go do and challenge this hated and hateful president on his war of aggression in the Middle East. And I'm a realist. I know that they live in the same oily pockets that their Republican brothers and sisters inhabit, but I don't know why they don't at least grab the political advantage when it's wrapped up for them in a red, white, and blue bow. Maybe they don't live in oily pockets as much as they live in kind of landmine oil fields. Every bombing drives up Exxon stock price. Funny how that works. I'm just totally exasperated over this whole disaster that is the Bush-Iraq war, and I know all of you are. If not all of you, at least 99% of you, and I would bet my modest bank account on that. But let's be clear to revisit this just for a moment. This appropriations bill, ultimately, none of this was about his war or social spending, or anything that would smack of governance at all. They don't know what governance is. This was about asserting the power of the unitary executive, something that Bush has been after ever since the day he was sworn in. These people are trying to remake the government of the United States, and thanks to an alternately sleepy and terrified public and a corporate media that, in my opinion, has abdicated all responsibility to be a check on this sort of power. They're getting it done. They have gotten it done. We do have a unitary executive officer in the United States right now. So what about the war? I've said it a million times if I've said it once. It will not end until there are massive demonstrations in the street and the powers that be feels that their status quo is being destabilized by us. There's a thought circulating around D.C. that there's a new crowd of anti-war activists out there who know better than the usual suspects. You know, the peaceniks and the dirty effing hippies that they call us on how to end this war. Well, we'll see now that the Democratic-controlled Congress has suffered a resounding and utterly humiliating defeat. How do you speak truth to power? You do it by showing up consistently and with as many friends as you can manage to convince to join you. You stand up for what's worth standing up for. You don't hope that a bunch of millionaires on Capitol Hill will do it for you. As we well know, after witnessing that shameful display of cowardice by our Democratic leadership of late. It's going to take us to do it, folks. It's going to take us to do it, you and me and our friends. It is obvious to me that the Democratic leadership does not have what it takes to get the job done. They don't have the will. They don't have the guts. What do you think? 866-546-5254. I hope they've read the polls the past couple of days. Democratic Congress levels down just about getting down there with Bush now. There was a big difference. Democrats had a 24-point lead over Bush. Now it's been cut tremendously. And snowfall, but their own. You know, this phoniness that goes on in Washington, D.C., this claim by Speaker Pelosi and other Democratic leaders that unconditional funding was necessary to, and they kept using it, to support the troops and not to leave them in harm's way. It's a lie. If they really supported the troops and wanted them out of harm's way, they would have passed legislation that would bring them home. But I'm afraid our Democrats had other priorities. The Republicans did as well. But the Republicans don't owe you and I like the Democrats do. Pelosi claimed that they had to provide unconditional funding for President Bush's war in Iraq because they couldn't get enough Republican support. You know, this is the big lie about the whole thing. She said, you know, they couldn't get enough Republican support to achieve the two-thirds majority that they need to override his veto. But they didn't, and here's what the big lie is, they didn't need a two-thirds majority to stop funding the war. They didn't need it. They used that as cover. All they needed to do was refuse to pass any unconditional funding for the war and instead pass a funding measure that would give enough money for the sole purpose of offering a safe and an orderly withdrawal from Iraq, or at the very least a funding measure that put a strict deadline for the withdrawal of our troops. That's all they had to do. And as Speaker of the House, and I don't care what she says, your actions speak louder than words. As Speaker, she could have set a legislative agenda and not allowed any funding bill to even come to a vote unless it had those provisions. And then if Bush refused to sign it, he would have been the one to put the troops in harm's way, not Congress. I'm tired of hearing that as an excuse. Support the troops. You know, there's all these people out there, all the talking heads on the TV now, apologizing for the Democrats, claiming that to not support funding for the supplemental would have allowed political opponents to portray them as maybe not supporting our troops. There were three Republican senators. I think Enzi, Burr, and I believe Coburn. They voted against the supplemental because of the $20 billion in pork. And they didn't fear those charges. They didn't worry about it at all. They didn't worry about being accused of not supporting the troops. So why should the Democrats have been afraid to oppose this thing as well? Had three Republicans with guts enough to vote against it, for whatever reason. And it's certainly is no longer the case as the people who constantly apologize for the Democrats on TV claim when they supported supplemental spending for the war in previous years that it would be politically difficult to oppose, you know, this big initiative of a popular president. Now that Bush is one of the least popular presidents in American history, and the reason he is one of the least popular in American history, it's come as a result of the very war policy for which the Democrats have once again given him a blank check to continue. So they're complicit in this. And he made it sound like, oh, we'd be the first ones to ever do this. We don't want to be the first Congress. No. There are precedents for Congress to stop war funding over presidential objections in the past. Clear back in 1970, May of 1970, Congress was able to eliminate funding for U.S. troops fighting in Cambodia. And Nixon was forced to get the troops out of there by June 30th. And the Democrats of today could have done the same thing regarding Iraq, but they obviously didn't want to. We had Democratic majorities that were able to suspend U.S. military operations in Angola, limit U.S. troops in El Salvador to 50, and to end support for the Nicaraguan Contras, and provide similar restrictions to administration foreign policy without claiming that giving these previous Republican administrations a blank check was necessary, and to use that phrase again, to support the troops. They didn't have to say that in the past. They didn't have to say it. They wouldn't have to say it now. And it's confounding to me because the polls show that 82% of Americans wanted Congress to either cut off funding for the war immediately or to throw in some strict conditions. But the Democrats, assuming they knew better than the American people, they decided to go ahead and make possible a vote to provide unconditional funding for the war anyway. I don't know what they're thinking. I really don't. 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy?
Yes.
Hi, this is Meg from New Hampshire. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You have just given a good litany of why the Democrats, I don't even think it's that they don't have guts. I think that you know, something else is going on here, because it's obvious that, you know, everything is going with them to stop funding that war. I mean, they would have gotten huge support for doing that. And, you know, they just went ahead and did it anyway, gave Bush everything he wanted.
I think you're so right. The very reason they're claiming they couldn't do it was exactly the reason they should have done it.
Exactly. Yep. And then, you know, all the time when the Republicans were in power and they, you know, threatened to, you know, enact the nuclear option, whatever that was, when they had a majority in power, when the Republicans did, and the Democrats now, you know, have the majority, but do they bother to try and twist arms or do whatever they can to get anything passed? No. You know, it's like, it's they're complicit. They're doing this. You know, they talk out of one side of their mouths and vote, you know, completely differently. It's just really, really frustrating.
Well, it is.
I am so angry.
And it's as though they were deaf. They didn't hear us last November. You know, and for anybody to conclude, I heard Democratic politicians say not long ago, well, that wasn't the only reason they sent the Democrats to Congress. Oh, please.
Yeah, really. Of course it was.
Do you remember another issue at the time why everybody said we're going to get a Democratic Congress? It was the war, and the war.
Yeah, the war. But also impeachment, too. Even though Nancy Pelosi said, you know, no impeachment's off the table, which is just astounding to me, just astounding. And you know what? I am so angry. But I'm scared, too. I'm scared. I just don't know what's going to happen to this country. I mean, you know, our Constitution has been shredded. And, you know, these guys have grabbed power. Are we going to go into Iran? The whole thing. You know, we don't have any money. We're in total debt. You know, I just think things just look so bleak.
All they do, and right. You know, you've hit upon a subject I want to talk about in the second hour today, probably the second hour, is this Iran deal. There's very obviously a big fight going on within the Republicans in Washington, D.C. About going to Iran, and we'll talk about that in the second hour, but that right. scares hell out of me. It really does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think even if we don't go into Iran, I think things are pretty frightening. And, you know, with the power that Bush has and, you know, are we even going to get through to the next elections? You know, are we even going to, you know, be able to vote in the next elections? Well, of course, it's debatable whether we voted in the last elections or whether those votes counted. But anyway, I'll hang up and listen. I'm anxious to hear what you have to say about Iran, and I'm just, you know, the whole thing is just...
Well, thanks for calling in. I share your consternation over the whole thing. I do. Yeah. It's I don't know what we do. Everybody head to the doctor and get a big slug of Valium or something, or take to drinking. I don't know.
Well, the way I see it, they're gonna round us all up at the same time. Anyway, we're all going down to Gitmo or wherever they're gonna put us all. We'll be together.
Yeah, they got to get a bigger place. Gitmo isn't big enough for all of us. I don't think. But
yeah, so who knows?
It'll take the whole island down there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for everything that you do. Keep it up, and I'll listen in to hear what you have to say about Iran.
Thanks to hear from you. Good to hear from you.
Bye
now. I'm still smarting over that bill. I am. And everybody's saying, well, get over it. Get over it. How could you get over it when they just enabled this guy to keep on going? How do you get over that, really? I don't know how you do. I haven't figured it out yet. I'm livid over it. I have been ever since it happened. I don't know. And you run across you know you can't help but think back. And the gal that just called reminded me of this. Do you remember the PNAC group? I know you all do, Progress for a New American Century, and Richard Pearl was in, Jeb Bush, I think Rumsfeld, and a whole bunch of these radical neocons that went to Bush Daddy and went to Clinton and wanted to invade Iraq, and were told no. But they had it on their own website and on their mission statement, so to speak, that what we needed was another Pearl Harbor type event. You remember that in the PNAC statement, in their own words, not my words, not paraphrasing. What we need is another Pearl Harbor type event. And now we have this. And I read this and I thought, oh my God, this can't be true. And I went and checked the sources, and it is true. Via Raw Stories, it said, I love it when the Republicans show their true colors. In his first interview as the chairman of the Arkansas Republican Party, Dennis Milligan told a reporter that America needs to be attacked by terrorists so that people will appreciate the work that President Bush has done to protect the country. He said, and let me quote him, at the end of the day, I believe fully the president is doing the right thing, and I think all we need is some attacks on American soil like we had on September 11, 2001, Milligan said to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And the naysayers, he goes on to say, will come around very quickly to appreciate not only the commitment for President Bush, but the sacrifice that has been made by men and women to protect this country. Milligan, who was elected as the new chair of the Arkansas Republican Party just 2 weeks ago, also told the newspaper that he is 150% behind Bush in the war in Iraq. In his acceptance speech on May 19th, Milligan told his fellow Republicans that it was time for a rediscovery of our values and our common sense. Values, values, values. I get so damn sick of hearing these Republicans, these radical neocons, use that term values. Values is something that supposedly is good for all of society, a value, something that's held dear by all the people. I do not hold dear the same things that these people do. How could I? How could you? I do not believe in torture. I do not believe in preemptively attacking a sovereign nation. I do not believe in killing 600,000 of their people. I do not believe in setting up new missile systems in the Czech Republic so as to stir the angry bear of the Russia, get them going again, and start another Cold War. I do not have the same values as these people, and nor should anybody. We heard, and we're going to hear again tonight. I wonder tonight if they'll have another pissing contest about who can do the best at torturing these Republicans when they talk tonight. Do you believe in torture? Remember that, the last one? Yes, I would God double the size of Gitmo. Yes, I would do anything it takes. And no, I'd torture more than he would. I'd torture twice as much as he would. No, I'd gouge their eyes out. No, I'd cut their tongues out. No, I'll be the bloodiest torturer. That's what they were up there discussing. Thank God at least one of them, John McCain, who has no chance in hell of getting the nomination, in my opinion. At least there was one that said he didn't believe in torture. Values? These people preach values to the rest of us? Values? Whose values? Those are terrorist values. Not my values. I have American values. Good old-fashioned American values of doing the right thing. As far as I can see, the left does not have designs on the rest of the world. We do not have military empire as our goal. We do not believe in robbing and pillaging other countries of their natural resources so that American companies can prosper even more and make that small segment of American society, the people that live down in Port Royal and Naples here that I see build these $20 and $30 million houses. That's not American values. I do not share the values with those people. Well, I hate it when they talk about values. But here we have this clown, this ass clown, the new chairman of the Arkansas Republican Party, Dennis Milligan. I think all we need is some attacks on American soil like we had on September 11, 2001, and the naysayers will come around very quickly to appreciate not only the commitment for President Bush, but the sacrifice that's been made by men and women to protect this country. What were the people thinking that elected him to this position as chairman of the Arkansas Republican Party? One would think he would be with one of these supremacist groups up in the hills of Idaho somewhere. That's the kind of talk that he was talking right there. Almost thinking it's a good idea if we get hit again, you know, and then, by God, then the rest of the people come along with us. I'll tell you something, if we get hit again like that, it'll have the opposite effect on me. If we get hit like that again, would you be able to sit back and say, oh, that Bush is doing a good job of keeping us safe, you know? I'm doubly committed. I would be doubly committed to getting to the root cause of the problem. That's what I would be doubly committed to. And it literally scares hell out of me that there are people like this Milligan in this country walking around, ooh, outside of asylums. Really remarkable, even in Arkansas, that this guy could get an office like that. It really is. You know, every person who is deeply civilized understands this very simple fact. When unspeakable barbarism and wide-scale murder and torture don't get the results they want, the solution is to employ more barbarism, more murder, and more torture. And all of you who don't agree with this, why, you're just a bunch of wusses. I can hear him talk. If all the Iraqis had anything like the self-governing expertise of the American pouring through their veins, why, they would have done a lot better by this late date. Some of you don't want to hear the truth, but you ought to face it now. We're superior to every other nation that's ever existed, now or has ever existed. And, of course, no other race is as good as ours. And please don't say that we can't even determine in any meaningful way what our race actually is at present. That's not the point. Anyway, you know exactly what I mean. At least you do if you're a real American. No one else is as good as we are. We have the right to tell everybody else how to live and tell every other country how it's got to conduct itself. And if they don't do what we demand, then we've got the right to kill them. This isn't hard. I don't understand why so many of you resist these obvious truths. Grow up, for God's sake. Be with us. That's what they're saying. These are our values. These are our Republican conservative values. And we just don't understand why the rest of you don't have the lust for blood and money that we have. I don't get it. I really don't. As I've said many times before, I try and be exactly reasonable. And I try and be able to come at an argument from both sides so that I can better understand what the other side's thinking. You know, so many times you're in an argument, a dispute of some kind, and you may be 75-80% right, but you're not, you know, all the way there. And you try and at least understand where the other side's coming from, if they've got any bone to chew on at all in the argument. You try and understand both sides. But try as I might, I cannot, for the life of me, put myself in the mindset of these crazy neocons that are running our country right now. I cannot do it. But the sad part is, I also can't put myself in the mindset of the Democratic leadership who's not standing up and fighting them the way they ought to be, the way we elected them to. So it's a difficult time. I've got to go speak to a Democratic club in a week or so. And they wanted to know what I'm going to talk about. And what I'm going to talk about is the difficulty of being a Democrat nowadays. And it is difficult. It is difficult. It's not as difficult as being a neocon Republican, but it's difficult being a Democrat today. Because I'm not exactly sure where our leadership stands. Maybe they're exactly sure where they stand. If they are, I wish they'd let the rest of us know. If they had some ulterior motive for their actions as of late, I wish they'd let the rest of us know. If it were to be for any good in the end. I don't understand, and I know a lot of you don't either. And I'm worried, and I'm afraid. I'm afraid for my country. I'm afraid for my family. And I'm afraid for my party. Somehow I hope it gets worked out. I really do. Well, I don't know where this first hour has gone already. My God, it's gotten away from us today. Talked too long about Scooter, I guess. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. 5 minutes worth of good, solid news, and then we'll be back. And we're going to talk a little bit about the fight going on within the Republican neocons about invading Iran. Don't go away. Listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, Louis Scooter Libby, former chief aide to Vice President Dick Cheney, has been sentenced to 30 months behind bars and a $250,000 fine. Libby was convicted of obstruction and perjury in the federal case involving the outing of CIA agent Valerie Plame. Today in the Czech Republic, in a speech celebrating democracy's progress around the world, President Bush criticized Russia for derailing democracy's advancement there. This comes amid growing tensions between the Kremlin and the White House over a proposed defensive missile shield in Europe, which Russia staunchly opposes. President Bush, trying to ease those tensions, said Russia is not the enemy and urged Moscow to work with Washington against common adversaries. In Spain, the Basque separatist group ETA today called off its 15-month ceasefire, accusing the Spanish prime minister of becoming a fascist. ETA says last month's elections were illegitimate due to the exclusion of their Batasuna political party. Authorities are on high alert, fearing a resumption of the violence that has been ongoing for 40 years. Trinidad authorities are holding the fourth suspect in connection with a terrorist plot to attack JFK Airport. Abdel Nur of Guyana turned himself in and has been charged, along with three others from Guyana, Trinidad, and the U.S., with conspiring to plant and detonate explosives in and around the New York airport. In Iraq, the house-to-house search for two kidnapped U.S. soldiers continues, despite yesterday's al-Qaeda video claiming the men were murdered. On the video, the men's IDs, credit cards, and other personal items were displayed. The two men were abducted during an ambush last month, along with a third soldier whose body was found in the Euphrates River. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said today U.N. security interference in Iran's nuclear program is illegal and imposing new sanctions would be like, quote, playing with the lion's tail. Ahmadinejad added the Security Council should remove its biased approach and pursue a more balanced policy for Iran. An Australian passenger train headed for Melbourne was struck by a large truck, leaving a gaping hole in the train and killing at least 11 people and injuring 50. It's unclear why the truck didn't stop. Transportation authorities say it's Australia's worst rail accident in 30 years. Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson goes to court Friday following his indictment yesterday for bribery and other crimes. Federal law enforcement officers found $90,000 in the Democrats' home freezer. And Wyoming's Republican Senator Craig Thomas has died of leukemia. He was 74. This is the Quality News Network.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
In the Persian Gulf, U.S. warships are bracing for Cyclone Gannu. The Category 3 storm heading for the Arabian Peninsula is packing winds up to 120 miles per hour. The U.S. Embassy in Oman has issued a warning message advising the approximately 1,200 Americans to stay indoors and monitor local news reports. Albertsons and Save-A-Lot supermarkets are recalling ground beef possibly contaminated with E. coli. 10 Western and Midwestern states are involved. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke says he believes the economy will rebound from its slow start regardless of whether or not the housing slump continues. Bernanke made the statements at a meeting in South Africa. Stocks fell this morning with this news, believing interest rates will not be lowered. Pharmaceutical giant Pfizer has been hit with a $7 billion lawsuit by the government of Nigeria. The government says the drug company conducted experiments on children that killed and disabled them. The federal government reports gambling on U.S. Indian casinos earned tribes $25 million last year. That's an increase of 11% from the year before. There are 387 Indian casinos in 27 states. Revenues at those casinos have nearly doubled in the past 5 years. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.50 a barrel right now on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And turning to Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 98 points, the NASDAQ is down 15, and the S&P 500 is down 9 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay.
Fly James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Music, of course, courtesy of music director of the Guy James Show, Billy Shears. And we are pleased to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Always glad to talk to you. Had a little sinus problem last week. I shouldn't say not a little. Here I go giving you details about things. but you ask, so I'll tell you. Got this sinus problem, and I've talked and talked and talked about it on the program, that all of a sudden I've developed some sort of allergy here living in Florida for the past few years. Quite a few now. And so my spouse buys me one of these, I guess you call it a nasal irrigation kit, whereby you put this saline solution and so forth in this little tube, and you're supposed to, like, bend over a sink and squirt it up one of your nostrils, and then eventually it's supposed to come out the other nostril and clean out your sinus passages and get rid of all the bacteria and so forth that's inside your sinus package. I can tell you truthfully, I had it sitting here for like 2 weeks and didn't want to use it. And a good friend of mine finally talked me into it. And so last night I prepare this thing. I look like Dr. Mengele, mixing and getting all this stuff ready. And I lean over the sink and I do this, and I can tell you for a fact that I now know what it's like to be waterboarded. I'm pretty sure. I nearly drowned myself with this thing. I don't know. Somebody's looking at me like, are you nuts? Yeah, I did. I nearly drowned. It was awful. It was an awful experience. I'm sure it's just because I've done it wrong, because I know other people who I consider to be wimps that have done it. And I hate to think of myself as even more of a wimp than these people, because I can't successfully do it. But anyway. So I had my own personal self-administered waterboarding experience last night. Yahoo. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. And I do want to talk in a few minutes about this fight going on that we're hearing about in Washington, D.C. And it's become an open secret now. I think I have a lot of contacts in Washington, and I've heard this for some time now, and evidently it's raging in D.C. And we'll talk about it in just a few minutes. But I did want to finish a thought in talking about this appropriations bill. I'm not done with that. I'm not sure I'll ever be done with it. But I think that the decision by the Democratic leadership of both houses and the majority of Democratic senators to vote for this unconditional funding for the war is a reflection of the Democratic Party's spending priorities, and I don't like what I see. And if you stop and think about it, you don't see a Democratic proposal for, you know, and we're talking about $100 billion here just to last until September. You don't see a Democratic proposal on the table for any sort of a $50 or $100 billion supplemental spending bill for health care. You don't see any Democratic proposal for a $100 billion supplemental spending bill for education, both of them desperately needed. There's no $100 billion supplemental spending bill for education or health care or the EPA for environmental protection. So what are their priorities? You know, it'd be different. Well, it wouldn't be different. I still wouldn't want the supplemental bill that went through for this war. But we ought to be cutting military spending, not increasing it by $100 billion. Absolutely ought to be cutting it. It appears then that the reason that the Democrats are willing to support another $100 billion for the Iraq war and not for health care or education or housing or environmental protection, it appears their reasoning is pretty straight up. The Democratic Party evidently believes that continuing the war is more important than meeting the basic needs of Americans. That's the way it looks to me. You don't hear any hue and cry about any of these other things. Not at all. Why? You know, if they're going to spend money to fight a war, they better find a way to pay for it. They better start cutting and whacking the pork out of the Pentagon for useless weapons systems that are doing nothing but subsidizing the military-industrial complex to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. If they're absolutely hell-bent upon spending this money on this war, they better find a way to pay for it. But have they gone through and cut these weapon systems that we're not using, nor will we ever use? Overpriced, underused, not feasible, outdated, whatever? No. Nothing being done for that. Nothing. It's like there's a gridlock in Congress. The Democrats control the House. The Senate might as well be controlled by the Republicans. And other than that first 100 days, or 100 hours rather, what's the Democratic Congress got done? Oh, you might as well, we passed the minimum wage bill. Have you taken a good look at that? Had to sneak it in with the supplemental bill for the appropriation supplemental bill for the Bush war? Man, I hope a lot of people read that closely and knew what was coming. I hope a lot of people who were making minimum wage didn't think that all of a sudden they're going to be making $7.25 an hour, because it ain't so. It's a thing that's going to be done incrementally. It's going to take quite a long time to get up at $7.25 an hour. But so there are going to be people disappointed. Did you watch the Democratic debate last night? I hate these debates. I really do. First of all, you tell me, how in the world could you decide on who to vote for by watching these debates? They're nothing but beauty contests. They're ridiculous. You know, you take a look at the one last night, okay? You talk about a setup. And without taking the side of anybody in the whole thing, without taking anybody's side, they put Gravel on one end, they put Kucinich on the other, therefore eliminating them from most of the FaceTime, and it was embarrassing to me how little mind they paid to Dennis Kucinich. I thought that was that whole thing last night, as far as Dennis Kucinich was concerned, was highly disrespectful and humiliating. Very untoward. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it one bit. They didn't talk to Dodd for, I don't know, what was it, 30, 40 minutes? Didn't talk to him at all. For the longest time, I thought there was actually a cutout of Dennis Kucinich standing there because there was not a sound coming out. They didn't ask him anything. And, of course, to stage this thing just the way the network wanted it, they put Hillary in the middle and Barack on one side and Edwards on the, you know, put him right there. So the three got the most FaceTime, got the most questions. Debate? Why do they call them debates? It wasn't a debate. It's never a debate. They don't answer the questions. They say what they want to say. They've got their sound bites already. They got their little lines already. I don't like them. I don't like these debates. Not at all. And we've got another Republican debate coming up tonight. And, of course, all of the candidates have sided with the Bush White House pretty much on the war. But there's some questions that should be asked tonight, and I wonder if they will be asked. Especially the guys like Romney. And we did a little research on Mitt Romney. In February of 2007, he said Romney says, and you know he's a leading contender. He said, if troop surge does not work, we'll know that in a five to six months, not years. And Romney now says it could take 15 months. My, did he change in just a couple of months, 3 months? February 9th and May 15th, he said, well, now it could be 15 months. Let's face it, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And John McCain. Back in 2003, John McCain, on April the 9th of 2003, on Good Morning America, John McCain said, the end is very much in sight. 2005, he said, well, another year will prove. Stay the course is working. Mm-hmm. And now John McCain... Caden is saying, well, you know, we've had troops in South Korea for 60 years and nobody minds. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Rudy Giuliani saying, if we leave, they'll kill us all. Hell, they'll probably be over here in like 2 days. They'll take a couple of days off and come and kill us all. Giuliani says the United States has an obligation to stay in Iraq. And, of course, we've got Fred Thompson. Glamour boy. Fred Thompson. A do-nothing senator. A great B actor. Better actor than Ronald Reagan. I'm going to admit that. And he was asking in March of this year, what would you do now in Iraq? And Thompson said, I'd do what essentially the president is doing. Yes. So don't expect to hear any big important statements tonight coming from this group of extremely, extremely weak Republicans. And I'm talking extremely weak. Oh, my. You look on that stage and you don't see much. You don't see much at all. I don't know who the darling of the Republicans are. I guess it's Fred Thompson right now. But, you know... If it's not Fred Thompson, Giuliani's doing rather well in the polls. And it's odd to me that some of the people in the Christian right, you know, well, they can't go with McCain and they can't go with, especially Giuliani because of his pro-choice. I heard James Dobson say he could never, 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 never support Giuliani. I think the ego of guys like James Dobson and Richard Land and Pat Robertson, their egos are so huge that they'd be more than willing to lose this election, just pass on it so that they could build up their own self-recognition and their own ego some more, build up their own power, because that's what they do with it, build up their own power. But that's another story. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Give us a call. Love to hear from you. I promised you earlier that I wanted to talk a little bit, and I hope you'll join in on the conversation if you have any thoughts about it. I think we're in a bad situation right now regarding Iran. And, you know, I see Scott Ritter feels exactly the same way, and Mohammed Al-Baradei, again, those two gentlemen feel the same way. You got all this talk going on behind closed doors in Washington, and they're saying there's a real battle underway between different flanks of the administration to try and determine the future of the U.S.-Iran policy. And there's a lot of evidence, and some of this came off of 1115.org. There's just a lot of evidence to suggest that there's a rogue government. Yes. A rogue American government. I'm not talking about some banana republic. A government within a government that's really and truly engaged in you might as well call it what it is, insubordination against Junior Bush. On the one side, you've got the Pentagon and the normal intelligence establishment providing support to the diplomatic effort led by Condi Rice, if you want to call it a diplomatic effort, if you want to call anything that she's done a real, true diplomatic effort. You got her deputy, John Negroponte, and Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns, and their legal advisor, John Bellinger. And they've also got a supporting cast that includes the Director of National Intelligence, Mike McConnell, and Secretary of Defense Gates, and CIA Director Michael Hayden. And on the other side, there's Vice President Cheney's team and his disciples who really and truly swing a big axe, a big swath. And Dick's group hasn't just been quietly undermining Condi's efforts, the Bush administration's efforts. A lot of people have reported that a senior aide on Vice President Cheney's national security team has been meeting with policy hands of the American Enterprise Institute. And doesn't that warm the cockles of your heart? The AEI, hardcore neocon think tank. And so Cheney's been scheming with them and a couple other think tanks, and more than one national security consulting firm, and explicitly stating that Vice President Cheney does not support President Bush's tack toward Condoleezza Rice's diplomatic efforts and fears that the president is taking diplomacy with Iran too seriously. Cheney's side doesn't want a damn thing to do with any sort of diplomacy. Nothing. And so this White House official that I'm talking about has stated to several Washington insiders that Cheney's planning to do, I guess what they call an end-run strategy around the president if he and his team lose this policy argument. And depending on how you think about it, you could look at it in many different ways. You could look at it as insubordination. I prefer to look at it as high crimes and misdemeanors and treason and mutiny and conspiracy. But the zinger of this information is the admission by this Cheney aide that Cheney himself is frustrated with Junior Bush, and he believes a whole lot like Richard Pearl that Bush is making a disastrous mistake by aligning himself with the policy course that Condoleezza Rice and Bill Gates and Michael Hayden and McConnell have made. And according to this official, Cheney believes that Bush can't be counted on to make the right decision when it comes to dealing with Iran, and thus Cheney believes that he's got to tie the president's hands. Imagine this. The vice president of the United States conspiring against the president in this way. Kind of makes you think that Cheney really liked to have the old Tower of London all warmed up to throw Bush in, doesn't it? Clapping him in irons. I'm sure that's crossed Cheney's mind a time or two. But, you know, there was already a pretty respectable group before Mohammed Al-Baradei. He came along and said, I wake up every morning and see 100 Iraqi innocent civilians are dying. I have no brief other than to make sure we don't get into another war or that we go crazy into killing each other. You do not want to give an additional argument to new crazies who say, let's go bomb Iran. And Alberadeves asked who the new crazies were. He replied, those who have extreme views and say the only solution is to impose your will by force. Well, as I've said for a long time, we may as well take our State Department and store corn in it, because that's about all it's been good for the last 7 years. Our State Department has been utterly worthless. We've had crises come up in many areas of the world. We have a crisis going on in Darfur. We have a crisis going on in Israel and Palestine and that whole area. It's a boiling cauldron. No administration has done less than this administration to defuse the situation with Israel and their enemies. We've got the situation with the Kurds and the Turks going on now. Our State Department has been utterly worthless. Now, I don't want to blame it all on Condi Rice. I'd probably like to, because I think she's been totally inept. I also wonder if she could be a respectable, at least respectable, Secretary of State if she were allowed to do what a normal Secretary of State is allowed to do and engage in diplomacy in these hotspots around the world. But, of course, she has not been able to do so. I rather believe that she'd be ineffective at it anyway. But here we have Cheney, one to attack Iran. We have a little bit of diplomacy being tried by the State Department, and the two are clashing over the whole thing. And people have spoken to some people on Cheney's staff and confirmed this. I don't know. It's a serious situation. And really and truly, you've got a vice president of the United States that's totally out of control, been out of control ever since he took it. And what else could you expect? Junior Bush goes to him and says, hey, find me a vice president. He comes, hey, well, you know what, Junior? I'm going to take a job myself. Essentially, that's what happened, you know. 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello. Hi, this is William from Hollywood.
Hi, William.
How are you doing?
Good.
I don't know if you've been watching any of the debates. I've been having a hard time streaming on the internet lately, but I haven't watched much of it. But I just get this impression that, you know, since Bush has lowered the bar so far down now, that it seems to me that just about anybody that looks better than him has a chance.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it may be generalizing quite a lot there, but that's just the impression I've been getting.
Well, you know, William, you take, what was it, 10 of those Republicans up on stage the last time? Was it 10? 10 or 8? I'm not sure.
There was a crowd up there.
Big crowd. Stand every single one of them up against George Bush, and what have you got? One by one. You're exactly right. Every single one of them looks superior to Junior Bush.
Exactly.
And ooh, that is a low bar.
It is a low bar. And that's what, you know, a lot of people are really into the campaigns right now, you know. And I haven't been, because that's one of the main reasons. Just looking at, and there's so many people on both sides, Democratic and Republican. You know, we had the Democratic one, I guess it was yesterday, and I watched a little bit of that.
Yeah, the Republican was yesterday, and we've got another Democratic one coming up. I forget when that's coming up, but you're right. They're hard to watch, man. They're hard to watch.
And all they have to do is say anything at all, because they know all the bad things that Bush has done. So it's not, there's a lot to choose from there to run on issues, and all you have to do is find the right song that people listen to, and you've got their attention, and just the right issues, you know?
Yeah, it's a contest who can get up there and sing the tune, I'll tell you what you want to hear the best. I'll tell you what you want to hear, and that's what they're after.
Exactly. And, you know, besides the fact that it's so early, you know, since there isn't a vice president running like there usually is, you know, on the one party who's ever in office now, which Cheney doesn't have a shot.
I hope.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, anything can happen. But I don't know.
It's not a pleasant thing that we've got about 500 days to go through this yet. It's not a pleasant thought at all.
No, and this impeachment thing, I mean, they might as well just I've just given up on that idea. I mean, you know, with the protests they've had, I mean, I don't know how much they have to pressure the Democrats in what manner to get them to wake up to what's going on. If they don't have any clue, then, you know, what are they doing there in the first place?
You know, William, I've heard a lot of commentators and I've heard a lot of Democratic politicians say, well, you know, 18 months to go, what's to be gained 18 months? You know, have they stopped to figure out how much damage this guy can do in 18 months?
That's the main issue right there.
Yeah.
I don't think they have. They're so focused on their campaign and their, you know, besides the amount of money that it costs and where that money's going to end up anyway is in the corporate pockets of the television, you know, which is all corporate-owned and corrupt, you know, like I think you've mentioned that on your show before. I mean,
sure.
Where that money's going to go. So you're just feeding the monster that created the monster. I mean,
it's a bleak outlook right now, and you know, people criticize us for talking that way, but you got to be real, and it's not a pretty situation. It's the worst political situation I've seen in my lifetime.
Well, same here, and you know what Cindy Sheehan said. I mean, I've got to agree with her. We don't want to look at the fault on our own side. We don't want to criticize our own side, but we have to.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and her criticism of our side was very well founded and deserved, very well. If you can't identify your own warts, you got no credibility.
That's exactly right.
And I fervently believe in that. You got to take a good hard look at yourself if you don't now and then, and identify what's wrong. You know, to thy own self be true and all that. Why? Then you're not worth much.
That goes right down to each individual.
Sure does.
And it's the same thing with the politicians. If we can't look at ourselves and find our own faults and what we're doing wrong and find a better way to go forward, or whatever you want, I don't want to use that phrase, but, you know, how are we going to do it with politicians if we can't criticize what they say? We can't say, you're wrong. This is the wrong route, you know?
Well, you know, William, you know, you mentioned, you used that phrase there, go forward. I happen to think that this is the first generation since the Depression that hasn't gone forward. What do you think?
I feel that's true. We haven't gone forward.
We identified last week economically. Now we've determined that this is the first generation where the son hasn't done as well as the father economically in this country.
Exactly.
And that's a terrible step backward. I don't know where we're headed. I wish I knew.
It is. I mean, and everything affects everything else all the way down the line. I mean, with Bush lowering the bar, it lowers the bar all across the board with employers and employees and, you know, this facade that people should go get an education. When they get an education, they can't even find a job because they want experience on top of it. Nobody gets a chance, you know. It's from one end to the other, the spectrum has been destroyed in this country.
Yeah, and I don't know what's it's going to take. It's going to take a strong politician. It's going to take some strong leaders to pull us out of it. And I'm looking for them. I don't see them.
Well, even, you know, with the global warming issue or global heating, whatever you want to call that issue, it's going to take a strong leader in every single country that is in the game to work together to solve this issue, because it's not just one country, it's the whole world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You get the developing nations, India and China, some of the worst polluters. They've got to be helped along to understand this as well, and you know, it's all going to start with American leadership, and we're not seeing it right now. I mean, we're seeing Al Gore make a run for that particular problem. But he's not in a position to govern, you know, provide any governance right now.
No, just direction. That's
unless he
direction.
Unless he jumps in after a while, and I still think he might.
I think he might, but I don't know. If it was me personally, I don't know if I would, because of what happened in 2000. I mean, he's come out a lot. I mean, he's a lot different personality than he was back in 2000.
Well, I did hear Carville say the other day, and I will agree with Carville on this. He said, once you've run for president and you didn't win, you want to do it again. He said there isn't anybody that's run for president, not one that doesn't want to do it again. And I suppose there's some of that in Al Gore, but I don't know. It's a tough road to hoe. I think he's no one can convince me right now that he's ruled it out. I think
no, I don't think he's ruled it out, but I think he's on like the knife's edge. You know, I mean, it's a who's going to know other than him what the personal battle is, whether he wants to go into this or not.
He's got a pretty good life right now.
Yes,
and I'm afraid I'd probably be selfish enough to go, no, never mind. I've got it made, and I'm in the not the twilight of his life, but in certainly past the halfway point. I'm gonna take it easy and coast a while. That's probably what I would do, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
William, good to hear from you. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you.
Good call.
Same.
What do you think? Will Al jump in? Going to meet with a bunch of his people next week at the Take Back America conference. They're going to already wrote me and told me they're going to be there in the exhibition hall, and it's going to be fun talking. In fact, I've got a button sitting here right now that I got last year there to draft Al Gore, and they're serious about it, and nobody's going to convince me that Al isn't a little bit serious about it too. I do wonder, and I guess I wouldn't be giving anything away by telling you, and I guess you know that I would welcome with open arms Al Gore into the race. I most certainly would. Not only would it make it a lot more interesting and cause some of the leading candidates on the Democratic side right now maybe to clean up their act a little bit or polish their act a little bit, depending how you want to look at it, but I've always thought Al Gore would be a great president. And we've got several great candidates, don't get me wrong. We've got some great candidates. I was asked to go down and critique several of the candidates the other day, and it's hard. As you well know, I love Dennis Kucinich. I do. I think he's a man of principle. Had the opportunity to be around Dennis quite a bit and talk to him one-on-one, and I believe he truly is a man that when he speaks, it's coming straight from the heart. The guy means what he says. Love Dennis Kucinich. I think Chris Dodd is a good man. I think John Edwards is a fine individual, and maybe if John Edwards has got a problem, it might be that he's too nice a guy. If I can critique John Edwards, it's probably what it is. He's probably too nice a guy. Do I think he'd make a fine president? I certainly do. I certainly do. I have every confidence that Barack would be a good president and that Hillary would be a good. I think we're loaded with talent there right now. It's just the idea that we've got to pick the best one. And I guess I don't hide the fact that I think if Al Gore got in, that he would certainly be my choice. But and I love Dennis Kucinich as well. It's tough. It really is tough. We're going to pause for a break right now. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
There is always some.
Ah, yes, the liar sleeps tonight. He says he sleeps well. He's in, I forgot where they're at. They're at the G8. I forget what country. Is it in the Czech Republic? Is it in Prague? I don't know. I think that's where they're at. I'm not sure. Wherever it is, he's embarrassing us. Well, that you can be sure. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us this afternoon. We hope you'll give us a call at 866-546-5254. Here's your chance. Here's your chance. For all of you who have longed for, wished for, pined for a personal photo of you and Junior Bush together, but you never had enough money to do it, now you can get that photo. That's right. $5,000 a photo. Relatively speaking, you can't give them away. Gas prices might be up, but there's something that's apparently a little cheaper these days. A photo with Junior Bush. Yesterday, Bush headlined a fundraiser for the New Jersey State GOP where donors could pay $5,000 to pose for a photo with the Commander-in-Chief. Well, now, some of you might think that's an expensive photo op, right? Well, that's actually cheaper than what donors paid a year ago for a grip and grin with Bush. Last summer, GOP officials around the country charged at least $10,000 a pop for a presidential photo op. A bargain compared to the $25,000 a flash Bush commanded during some Republican National Committee fundraisers back in 2000 and 2004. So you can see what a bargain this is now at only $5,000. Last summer, the GOP relied instead on other administration emissaries like Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and former President George Herbert Walker Bush, and they all campaigned for Tom Keene Jr., who ran for and lost, as you well know, New Jersey's U.S. Senate seat. And for the record, a photo with Rove cost donors $1,000, while pictures with Cheney and Bush Daddy were $5,000, but that's peanuts. In June of 2006, donors at a Keene fundraiser paid $10,000 apiece for a photo op with First Lady Laura Bush. So, Laura is commanding twice as much for a photo as her hubby. And they got that little dog. I rather imagine the little dog he's getting as much for a photo with the doggy. What is that dog's name? I forget. The one that Bush grabbed him and dropped him. What is it with presidents and their pets? Remember Lyndon Johnson getting people all whacked out of shape? I know a lot of you youngsters don't remember this, but Lyndon Johnson had these, I don't know what they were, beagles? I think they were beagles. And he had a picture holding one up by his ears. And people got all just completely bent out of shape. Saw the president of the United standing there holding this dog's ears, kind of pulling him off the ground a little bit, and people went crazy. The SPCA was complaining and were complaining and all that. Anyway, I digress. And, of course, we had Nixon and checkers. and Bill Clinton and their cat. Franklin Roosevelt and his little dog, Falla. Where do I come up with these stories? I guess I like dogs. Oh, my. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call here on the Guy James Show, we'd like to hear from you. 866-546-5254. And for those of you who have unlimited calling and want to save us a nickel or so, you can get us by calling 941-876-6896. That's 941-876-6896. And that way, if you've got unlimited calling, why, we don't have to pay for it on our 800 number, and we save a few shekels, indeed. We're hearing constantly about this surge. We're hearing two different stories. We're hearing from the administration that, well, we hear stories now and then that, you know, all the good we're doing, and things are picking up and all that. Sure is. Picking up at the mortuary, and the flights back and forth to Dover, Delaware have increased quite a little bit. Things evidently are completely out of control in Baghdad. And today we hear General Petraeus arguing that it's too early to judge whether a Baghdad security crackdown was successful because the last of five extra brigades haven't even been deployed yet. So here we are, how many months into the surge that they said was going to be 6 months? How many months are we into it now? Apparently the 18,000 troops already sent to Iraq have been conducting something other than real operations, according to Petraeus. We had to wait on this last brigade to make it go. I don't know. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, your California fan club guy.
Hi, Dave.
I watched the debate. Well, no, I guess it was a joint appearance. But I thought all of them looked good and sounded good, certainly as compared to what we'll hear tonight. But I like Edwards a lot. And I think the two that have the most to tell us, America, it was Kucinich and Gravel, and they minimized them. I think corporate media has pretty much decided that we are going to have Obama or Clinton in either order. And I like Edwards a lot. I think he made some really good points. And, you know, I think the press, the media is told that however popular Edwards gets, always say Edwards is sliding a bit, losing ground, because the media doesn't want him. The reason I think that they're selecting Clinton and Obama is both of them are on the take from the big corporate special interests. They are the candidates that the finest candidates America could buy. And they accept money from the war profiteers. And for a long time, both of them had been, in effect, supporting a continuation of the war. Barack had stated otherwise, but wasn't voting that way. And Hillary, I think it was just for her the practical thing to do. It would be politically unpopular to oppose the war. Now I think they all know it is very popular to oppose the war. But they've also got the money in their pocket that's been given to them by Lockheed Martin and by Bechtel and whatever.
Oh, it's, you know, Hillary is nothing if she's not the consummate politician. There isn't any question. She's probably more of a politician than anybody on that stage, able to lean and bend and mold herself into what she needs to be, a chameleon of sorts if necessary. Sometimes it's not all bad in politics, but you hate to think that these people are not principled to just be what they are, instead of being what they think we want them to be.
Well, if anybody is saying, I think it would be the politically popular, correct thing to do is to support Bush's war, and knowing that well more than a million people have been wounded or injured as a result of this, the Treasury is near bankruptcy. I mean, how many trillions of dollars in debt it is, and say, well, I'll go along with that. That, to me, is somebody, they're not going to get my vote. They have to know better, you know. even if it's going to cost you, you don't support that kind of a thing.
That's right. That's right. Under no circumstances, if you're serious about doing the right thing, would you vote for that? I it's one of the most misguided things I think I've ever heard anybody do.
You know, I feel this country is in so much danger, so much threat is upon us, you know, that we really need somebody excellent, to help pull it together. I hope that whole panel up there will have a part to play in it, that whoever among them. And they sounded friendly. They were not really attacking each other this time. Gravel was firing a few good shots at him. It needed to be fired, too. He was only allowed about 2 minutes out of the 2 hours.
Yeah, Gravel, he's a guy that he's completely at ease doing that, and he knows that it's all or nothing, and he might as well use all of his ammunition. He's going to, and I'm glad he is.
And he's saying it right on. This is living proof that corporate America is owned and controlled by these giant corporations. These people scare me. He says it.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's refreshing to see somebody stand up there and be completely honest and open with people. You know, whether you agree with everything he says or not, it's just doggone refreshing. You know, the guy's got a little bit of Harry Truman in him.
Yeah.
I don't care what it costs me. I'm going to say how it is, whether you like it or not. And I like that. I do.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I really do. I'd love to see him make it, but the cost is he hasn't got it one chance in a million, does he?
No, certainly not. But
and they make it where everybody says Kucinich is the best, but Kucinich can't get elected. Well, if everybody that said Kucinich is the best, but he can't get elected, voted for him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If everybody said he couldn't get elected, he's great, voted for him, he'd be elected. But
one of them said something that really surprised me because it's a taboo subject. You're just not supposed to ever bring this up, but that was Biden said public funding of elections. No longer should we have our hand out to all these big special interests.
I know. He caught me a little off guard with that, too.
Everybody must have turned blue and took a deep breath. What did he just say?
Yeah, well, you know my position. My position is no funding.
Well, I think public funding would be great because they do have to make themselves known. But if they do it by money that they've taken from Bechtel and Halliburton and all that, then, you know, those corporations don't give out money on the hope that they just want honest government. They want something for themselves.
Yeah, it's
love your program much, Guy.
Thank you, Dave.
And I'm always a regular. You can count on it.
Thanks very much. Good to hear from you.
All right, Brett.
Campaign financing. They certainly made a mockery out of that, didn't they? The McCain-Feingold campaign financing law that went into effect was ended up being kind of worthless. And I guess we all knew it would be. Because left to their own devices, these people are not going to discourage corporate money. If they think they've got a chance of being elected in any way, any fashion whatsoever, they're going to take any amount of money they can get from anybody. That's just how it is. Look at some of the monies that have been taken from scoundrels over the years. I don't care. They'll take it where they can get it. And it always amuses me when they said, yeah, I'll take their money. That doesn't mean I'm going to vote the way they want me to. Sure. Maybe in rare cases. I was doing a little research over the weekend about the big pharmacy companies and this latest bill to prohibit drugs from coming in from outside of the country. And it was amusing. The vote, there were 49, I'm trying to think what the exact vote was right now, but 49 senators voted against it to let the drugs in from other countries. I think the number was 49. Anyway, I started looking up through Open Secrets and every other venue that I could find how much money was donated to these people, the people that voted for the pharmaceutical companies in this matter. I wanted to see how much money that each of them got. Well, as it turns out, wouldn't you know, and I know this is just one of those coincidences, out of the top 20 that voted for the pharmaceutical companies, let's put it this way, out of the top 20 who received the most money, the biggest money list, the top 20, 18 of them voted with the pharmaceutical companies. Coincidence? I think not. The 20 that got the most money from Big Pharma, 18 of them voted with Big Pharma, and one of them abstained and didn't vote at all. I'm not so sure that number isn't two of them didn't abstain. But 18 of them were Republicans, two of them were Democrats. That's enough evidence for me right there that big business owns the United States government. I don't think you need to go any farther than that. Let's be honest about it. It's no coincidence at all that if you got a couple hundred grand from Big Pharmacy and you voted with them, we know why you did. That money in your campaign pocket helped you decide your vote. Let's be honest here. You know it did. Going to do a story on that on the program coming up soon. I did some pretty in-depth research on it, and it's disgusting. Every time you start searching the money with these people, it's pretty disgusting, almost always. And I see that we have morality is an issue in the House right now, and it's good to see the people coming forth looking for, you know, to do the right thing. We got Mr. Boehner from Ohio, House Minority Leader. He saw this deal with Congressman Jefferson, and as I said at the outset of the program, Jefferson ought to be out of there right now. If I had my way, he'd be gone, have his desk cleaned out by now. But here we have House Minority Leader John Boehner move quickly to force the expulsion of Representative William Jefferson, Democrat from Louisiana, from Congress following his indictment Monday on federal corruption charges. The Republican leader will ask members of the House to vote on a resolution requiring the Ethics Committee to review the indictment filed against him in order to seek his expulsion from the House, according to his office. Well, Boehner also talked about Tom DeLay back in April 2006, and Boehner said this country owes Tom a great debt of gratitude for helping lead America in a new direction, a direction outlined in the contract with America that saw balanced budgets, historic welfare reforms, lower taxes, regulatory relief, and a renewed respect for the sanctity of life. He has served our nation with integrity and honor, and I'm honored to call him my colleague and friend. So Boehner, on Tom DeLay being indicted, he's my friend. We honor him. We love him. We think he's the greatest guy that ever walked on two legs. But the thief, Jefferson, he's got to be thrown out. Talk about calling, talking out of both sides of one's mouth. These guys can do it, can't they? Well, it's been a pleasure having you along with us this afternoon on the Guy James Show. It truly has. We'll be back tomorrow with more interesting programming for you. We are a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Listen to all the programs on the network. We got a great group here. We really do. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.